Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. I'm your host. My name is Rudy Obias, and joining me, he is a writer for ScreenRent.com, Justin Vactor. He knows everything about comic books. Thank you for joining me here on Movie Night.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, my friend.
Yeah, Justin is my go-to for all things comic book oriented. The last episode he was on, we actually talked about Iron Man 3, and now we're here talking about the new film from Zack Snyder and DC Comics, Man of Steel, a Superman reboot. So this is the first Superman film that we've had since Bryan Singer's 2006 film Superman Returns, and this is kind of a grittier take on the Superman origin story. This movie seems to be more science fiction than anything else, which was kind of refreshing. And this is from Zack Snyder, who his last film was Sucker Punch, but before that he gave us other comic book adaptations of 300 and Watchmen. Before we actually talk about Man of Steel, Justin, what did you think of Superman Returns back in 2006 when that movie came out?
When I left the theater for Superman Returns, I was very disappointed. I felt like it relied way too much on the previous Richard Donner movies, and it tried to ride the coattails of those ones and be a love letter to the Richard Donner movie rather than being its own movie in itself. So I really liked Brandon Routh, and I was hoping that he would continue portraying the Man of Steel in future films, but overall I was disappointed in Superman Returns. Actually, I was just watching it on Blu-ray yesterday, and I was like, oh yeah, this is what I was disappointed with. I remember this.
Yeah, a lot of Kate Bosworth flailing her hands is all I remember in the movie. What are your thoughts on Superman to begin with? We've had arguments in the past. I am not actually a fan of Superman himself, and you called me un-American for not liking Superman.
Yes, this is very true. Rudy Obias hates apple pie, he hates baseball, and he hates Superman. So therefore, my argument is Rudy Obias hates America. I think I've been proven correct to that statement, but I like Superman as a character, and I've had 75 years worth of Superman incarnations, whether it be comic books, animated films, live action TV shows, and live action films to draw upon. But Superman was a character that I was drawn to as a child, and it was Superman and Spider-Man were kind of my two big favorites when I was a kid, and I've always carried that with me. And really, I thought about it the other day. A lot of my morals, I think, come from Superman, and thinking, okay, this is when I was younger, this is what Superman would do. He would help this person out, or so I feel like I'm a better person because of Superman now, Rudy. I'm the kind soul that I am because I strove for the ideals of truth, justice, and the American way.
Or in Superman Returns, all of the rest of the stuff,
yeah,
is what they say in the film. So let me ask you, what are your thoughts on Man of Steel then? I mean, does this movie hold up to the candle of Superman? And I guess how does this fit in as just a Zack Snyder film and what DC and Warner Brothers wants to do and kick off the DC cinematic universe to compete with what Marvel's doing with their films?
Yeah, it's very interesting to see what this is going to bring, because I've seen a lot of very positive buzz over the movie on Facebook, on Twitter, on a lot of my friends talking about it. The hype leading up to it was pretty grand. And after the movie's been released, I've been seeing people, oh, I'm seeing it for the third time. And one person, I'm seeing it twice in the same day. And it was like, man, these guys really love this movie. This must be a great movie. That was before I saw Man of Steel. Unfortunately, my viewing of it did not contain any of the wonder and hope and awe that a lot of my friends were seeing. And I, again, left the theater disappointed, much like when I left Superman Returns. I had kind of a deja vu of, man, I still don't think that they've captured the essence of the character of Superman. And you talked about kind of a dark, gritty take on the character. And I think you can see that in not only the the tone of the film, but kind of the color palette that they use and the color correction of the movie is kind of a darker tone than what we saw in Superman Returns. The costume is kind of darker and muted colors rather than the bright Superman of the, let's say, Christopher Reeve era of Richard Donner films. And I don't think Superman, the character, fits that tone. I think that's much more of a Batman thing, and that fits that character. But also, you know what? I think this movie kind of suffers from the Amazing Spider-Man syndrome of, number one, trying to force that dark and gritty tone on a character that doesn't quite fit it. And then number two, showing us an origin story for a character that we don't need to see, or rebooting a origin story that we don't need to see again because we've seen it time and time again. And they did not bring anything, I thought, new or creative to it the way that, let's say, Batman Begins did for a reboot of an origin story of the Batman character. I don't think they accomplished the same thing with Man of Steel.
Well, I too am very disappointed in Man of Steel. I was actually had pretty low expectations going into it because I'm not a big Superman fan. I've seen all of the Superman movies, and thinking about before the screening that I saw Man of Steel, I thought to myself, I think my favorite iteration of Superman is Superman in, I believe, Frank Miller's Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, okay.
Just because he is kind of a he's a Boy Scout, definitely, and he's everything that Superman is. But in Dark Knight Returns, he is now kind of the soldier for Richard Nixon, for America, or Ronald Reagan for America. And I like that. I like this idea that Superman is doing all of America's dirty work, that he is completely American and holds all the truths to being what a quote-unquote American is, even to the extent of doing the dirty work for the United States government. And I like that quite a bit. And I think if this movie went that direction, it would be very dark indeed. I was not a fan of this film. I think I disagree with you. I think my only thing that I did like in this film is the first 20 minutes of the movie when it felt like a completely different sci-fi type of movie. I was actually surprised how much sci-fi is in this movie. But after that first 20-25 minutes of the movie, once we get into Earth and Smallville and Clark Kent and Superman, I was just completely bored. I thought this movie was very dull and just prolonged for no reason. I was not a fan of the flashback style of structure in this movie. To me, thinking about it after watching the film, I thought this was a very good episode of Lost or Battlestar Galactica, especially the way that it went to flashbacks as a crutch. I think it works better in TV because it's only this hour-long format, but here this movie is about 2.5 hours long, and it doesn't really work so well. I found myself rolling my eyes every time I went to a flashback. I thought it was just a pretty lazy way to show this character's backstory. It just keep going back to that well over and over again. I thought it was just pretty bad. And then the last 45 minutes of the movie is just your conventional good versus evil, where we have to save humanity by destroying a city completely and killing all of these people, but not even acknowledging what has happened here. Yeah. It was the same ending as Star Trek Into Darkness, as The Avengers. And actually, I saw a lot of similarities between a movie that came out 2 years ago with Transformers Dark of the Moon, where Zod's plan to bring Krypton, to give Krypton a rebirth on Earth, is the exact same plan as Sentinel Prime from Transformers Dark of the Moon, where he wants to resurrect Cybertron on Earth. It's the exact same plan, and I thought to myself, like, wow, we saw that 2 years ago in a Transformers film.
Yeah, you know where else we saw that was kind of in Superman Returns, where Lex Luthor wanted to create this new island and, you know, his whole land scheme that he had. And it was like, I want to create this barren wasteland where nobody would want to live, but this is where I want to sell real estate and property on.
Yeah, so I found all that stuff problematic. Definitely, I think the only shining point in this movie for me is the first 25 minutes of the film. And Michael Shannon as Zod, I thought he was just – I like his presence on the screen, but his character really didn't amount to anything. overall, I do feel that this is a pretty disappointing film. A lot of people are comparing it to Dark Batman Begins, a movie that I'm not that big on in the Dark Knight trilogy. I think it's probably the weakest of the three films, but that's not to say that I don't think it's a bad film. I think it's a good film, but I just think it's the least of the three. Justin, what are your thoughts on, I guess, the comparisons to this film to Batman Begins? I mean, Christopher Nolan was a producer on this film. They actually brought him on to kind of placate the whole Dark Knight thing with Superman.
Yeah. And, you know, when I left the theater, I said to myself, I don't see any Nolan influence on this movie whatsoever. I can see the comparison in that it's an origin story. It's a reboot. It's a retelling of, you know, a popular character origin story. And they did flashbacks in Batman Begins also to tell kind of Batman's story. But it worked so much better. It was so much more effective in Batman Begins. Like you were saying, all of the Smallville stuff, to me, I felt like actually I at first I was thinking, oh, okay, this is a good way to do it. Do it in flashbacks rather than tell the entire Smallville portion at once. But then as the movie went on and they kept doing it and kept going back to it, I was like, no, this is not a good narrative structure. I would have preferred, you know, if you're going to tell the Smallville story, tell it as one chunk and then go on to, tell it in a linear fashion, because I didn't find it interesting jumping back and forth between the, teenage or 20-year-old Superman as he's going from job to job, randomly saving people, and what seems like he didn't have a goal or, you know, purpose to his life. And then once he got to the ship, it seemed like, oh, okay, well, that was what he was looking for the entire time. But then it felt like the movie never kind of, maybe if they had kind of led us in that direction of, okay, yeah, he has a purpose of, he knows about this ship, he knows about, he obviously wants to find out about his origins and everything. And I was waiting for, okay, how are they going to explain to him? Because we all know, you know, well, I guess a lot of us know the Superman origin, where he comes from, because it's become part of pop culture now. You know, even if you're not a big Superman fan, Krypton and Kryptonite and things like that are part of our culture. So a lot of us know these things, but how are they going to explain it to the character in the movie? And then once they did, once they kind of had this, I almost felt like it was a Deus Ex Machina of, okay, yeah, here's all this information. Let's download this exposition into our brains real quick, even though we already know it. So I felt like that was kind of strange, the way that they ended up doing all of that. And it also left me thinking, I wish I had spent more time in Smallville, because a lot of the moral center of Superman, the character, is from his upbringing. It's that nature versus nurture argument of Superman's an alien and he's not from this world, but he was raised as a human and he has these strong, you know, some would say these strong Christian values, you know, American Christian values of Superman being raised in rural Kansas. You know, that is what leads him to be who he is. And it's his parents who really, his earth parents, who kind of instill that in him. And I never got that from this movie. I know that because I'm a Superman fan. But in the movie, I felt like Diane Lane and Kevin Costner were kind of wasted in their roles. I also felt like Kevin Costner was a dummy, and I didn't like him as Pa Kent. I didn't feel like he was someone who would instill these great values in Clark, because what he ends up telling him is, you know, basically, well, you're the only one that – you're the most important one that matters. We need to keep your identity a secret. And at one point, Clark asks him, he's like, well, what was I supposed to do, let those people die? And then Pa Kent is like, yeah, well, probably, you know, just to protect your identity, you probably should let those guys drown or die. And I was like, really? That's what Pa Kent would have told Superman? And then I don't know how deep you want to get into spoilers for this film, but the resolution of Pa Kent, his character, I thought was kind of ludicrous, and it kind of made me upset when I saw it.
Yeah, I actually kind of laughed when I saw it, not because it was it wasn't a tragic end, but it was just kind of silly to me that there was an opportunity for Clark Kent to save his father, but his father kind of waves him off. It's kind of I guess spoilers for Spider-Man, but if Uncle Ben sees Peter Parker in the background and says, "No, let's have this happen to me.
Yeah.
Let this guy kill me. Don't save me." You know.
Yeah.
Let him kill me.
I understand what they were trying to go for, the whole like the principle and the value that he was trying to instill in him, but at the same time, it's just dumb. Number one, the fact that he's like sacrificing his life over a dog. He went back to save the dog. There's no doubt in my mind he would have let the dog die if that was, you know, a realistic portrayal of this guy. No matter how much you love your dog, like, I don't think you're going to go into imminent danger and knowing you're going to die just for this dog. And then number two, when you have Superman in your back pocket and Superman can save you, you don't wave off Superman. That's just dumb. And then what was dumb on Superman's part, he could have saved him easily with his speed. And no, you know, if you're going to protect your identity or whatever, oh, I can't show anyone my powers, you could do it before anyone even notices you're gone. You could have super ran over there with your super speed, saved him, and it would have been over with. There's no need to sacrifice his life over this ideal or this principle of, okay, I disagree with you on this. So, and it was like, okay, we just had this big fight. Now he's going to pass away. And oh, okay. Now, you know, I can see the dramatic beats of it and those type of things, but it fell flat for me. It did not work at all.
Yeah, and this whole film falls flat because then slowly, soon after that, it then devolves into like this very conventional summer blockbuster movie with Zod and Superman just beating the shit out of each other in a built.
Superman punches harder than Zod, so Superman wins.
Yeah, and you actually sent me an article before we actually started recording it that I found very interesting, and you actually brought up the morality of Superman, and how growing up Superman has informed your sense of right and wrong.
Yeah,
and that article you sent me from Entertainment Weekly was pretty telling that Superman kills someone in this movie and doesn't really think twice about it. He sees it as an absolute necessary when, you know, Superman doesn't kill anyone, you know, Batman doesn't kill anyone, but here it's kind of okay for Superman to kill someone, even if he is evil.
Yeah, that, like, it just left a bad taste in my mouth. The article I found very interesting as well. It's called What Man of Steel Gets Wrong About Superman by Darren Franich, and it's on Entertainment Weekly, like you said. And even if they're trying to go in a new direction for Superman, this is not the direction to go in. It doesn't make any sense why he would do that in the movie. And there's been, like I said, there's been 75 years of Superman to fall back on where you can find a different way to imprison the villain or, you know, and as much as people say it's dumb that Batman lets the Joker live, it's still, Batman doesn't cross that line of just straight out killing someone in order to solve the problem. Like, it's just, that's not something that our society, you know, deems good or has value. And it's not something that Superman should be doing either. And then not only that, but I felt like there was no remorse afterwards. There was no, you know, at the end of the day, it's still, all right, Superman wins. Superman gets the girl. Everyone but the government trusts Superman and everything's a-okay and, you know, a smile and a wink and now we're done. Superman's the hero that we all love. But no, there should be some remorse about what happened here and this decision should have some more weight to it than it did.
What did you think of Henry Cavill in this role of Superman and Clark Kent? He's a vastly different type of Clark Kent that we've seen. Yeah. And actually, I said this to you that they that Zack Snyder has effectively made Superman into Wolverine.
Oh yeah.
in Man of Steel, namely, like that whole Clark Kent wandering the earth, going from job to job in the Pacific Northwest as a fisherman, as a logger. It just really reminded me of of Wolverine, of Logan, you know? And then it, when the movie ends up in Canada, I was like, man, this is very much like Logan slash Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah, very much like that. Henry Cavill looks really good with his shirt off. He's he very much looks the part of Superman. But I think overall, he was kind of a blank slate to me, kind of like just not only him in particular, but Superman in this movie felt like a blank slate to me. There didn't seem to be a lot of heart, a lot of personality to it. There didn't seem to be any type of character development or arc to the character of Superman. So I think Henry Cavill's performance is okay. I didn't, you know, I wasn't like, oh man, rolling my eyes, like this is a terrible performance. But at the same time, I didn't get that same sense of, you know, that the magic of Superman, the character, like I felt with Christopher Reeve. I think I always fall back to that performance. And I know a lot of people don't like to compare the Supermans. They want to just let's exist in a vacuum like the other ones never happened. But I just, when something's come before and it's the same character, I just feel like, okay, there is kind of a critical responsibility that you have where you have to look at what came before you can look at, well, you know, that look ahead, you have to look back. So I feel like Henry Cavill was okay, but nothing about the casting made me say, yes, this was a great choice for Superman. Same thing with Amy Adams as Lois Lane. I felt like she's a good actress. I've seen her in many things be very good, but nothing about her portrayed the character of Lois Lane made me think, oh yeah, this was a great choice. So I was kind of disappointed in the casting as well.
Yeah, I think overall this is a pretty disappointing, dull movie. That this movie is inevitably going to be a big blockbuster, and there's going to be a sequel. They already greenlit Man of Steel 2 and now a Justice League movie. So I guess lastly, what do you think of the possibilities of this DC cinematic universe? I mean, there's probably going to be a Wonder Woman movie, an Aquaman movie, a Flash movie, and perhaps a Green Lantern reboot now.
Well, as a comic book fan, I would love to see that happen, but as a movie fan, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Green Lantern left a really bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, and I don't think DC has the same playing field or tools that Marvel has. And I think they're trying to emulate and copy the success of Marvel, but I just don't think they can do it, because we've seen time and time again that they feel that Batman and Superman are really the only characters that are viable and that they could sell. So even when they try to do things like Green Lantern, it falls flat on its face. So now we saw that with the Wonder Woman television show. We see that with even the DC animated stuff, which they go a lot further into the DC universe in the animated field. But even there, a lot of their stuff now that's been coming out lately is either Batman, Superman, or Justice League. And it feels like those are the only three viable options for them. So I would love to see that happen in a full DC cinematic universe, but I don't think it's just with the way that movies work, the way that audiences work, it's going to be relegated to the pages of the comics. I just don't think it's going to be there.
I mean, I would look forward to see something like a Justice League movie. I mean, I love the Avengers, and I would love to see Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and The Flash and Green Lantern teaming up together to fight some evil force in a movie. But Marvel had Kevin Feige as kind of like their sole creative force. He produced all the films. He's the one constant in all of the Marvel movies. And DC really needs someone like that to oversee the rest of the movies, to make sure everything is going in the right direction. And I don't know if Zack Snyder is that person. I know Christopher Nolan is not going to be that person. I always campaign, get someone like Bruce Timm, you know, this DC Comics writer and artist. You know, I think he would be great as someone who can oversee the DC universe. But I don't know how much movie experience that guy has. But I do think that DC needs some driving force to drive all of these movies together. I mean, I would like to see a Man of Steel 2 just to see if hopefully it will improve on this film, which I don't think it's a terrible film, but I don't think it's a great film, but it's just a very, very mediocre film, which is sad because it could have been something much better. And so, yeah, that's Man of Steel. Let's move on to our next film. This is The End, something a little bit more upbeat. This is the end, an apocalyptic film with a lot of talented comedic actors playing themselves: James Franco, Jonah Hill, Seth Rogen, Jay Baruchel, Danny McBride, and Craig Robinson, all trapped in a house during the end of the world, the rapture, as it was. James Franco is having this big party, and then all of his celebrity friends attend the party, and then the end of the world happens, and it's this small group of celebrities dealing with the end of the world. Justin, what did you think of this movie? Going into the movie, I wasn't looking forward to it. I thought it was going to be really stupid, but I was pleasantly surprised that it was actually really, really funny.
I went into it with kind of the opposite. All of those actors I really like, and so it almost felt like the Justice League of comedic actors to me, or the Avengers, like getting all of these guys that I love and putting them into one movie. So from the moment I heard about this, the concept of it, I was in, and so I went into it with high expectations, and I was pleasantly surprised. It's probably my favorite comedy of the year, although that's not saying much judging by the comedies we've seen this year, but it was a pleasure for me the entire time. I laughed throughout. I think there were plot elements of it and things that were kind of loose and thin, but overall, to me, the number one thing with a comedy is how funny is it? Does it make you laugh? And that was the bottom line in This Is the End. I thought it was hilarious, and it was able to overcome a lot of the there were some structural things about it that I wasn't too fond of, but overall, it was just a hilarious movie.
Yeah, I think that the biggest flaw of the film is its plot. I mean, it's a pretty thin plot, and there's nothing that really goes on in the movie. I mean, it's really just them in a house, and then it's just a bunch of set pieces that aren't really that interesting, don't really drive the plot. I mean, I think 20 minutes are spent with them trying to find water, which doesn't seem very compelling. But because of these actors, because of these guys in the movie, you know, ostensibly playing versions of themselves, I don't think anyone feels that, you know, this is really what Danny McBride is really all about and James Franco is really all about. And I think it's hilarious that they're playing versions of themselves. Everyone, I think, in this movie comes out looking good because they can manage to make fun of themselves and make themselves look stupid playing off their personas. And that no one in this movie is taking themselves seriously. And that really comes off. And it just puts everyone in a good light because of it. Even Rihanna, you know. I like that Rihanna's in this movie and she doesn't take herself too seriously. That she can make fun of herself while being in this movie. And that's great. All the supporting cast in this movie is pretty fantastic. I mean, they're in the movie pretty briefly and then they get killed off. Jason Segel, Kevin Hart, Aziz Ansari. Michael Cera, I think, completely steals the show. And it makes me laugh that he can make fun of himself in this way, being this coked up celebrity that's annoying everyone around him, but and also getting a blowjob and a rim job at the same time while drinking a Capri Sun, I believe. I very much enjoy this movie. Emma Watson comes off looking great in this movie. And one of the biggest surprises, for me at least, is Danny McBride kind of steals the show in this movie.
Yeah, and he's an actor that I've loved. Eastbound and Down is one of my favorite TV shows that has, you know, in the past 5 years. And his style of humor, all of these guys, they have that kind of that rude, crude style of humor that I love. And he just fits in perfectly. And like you said, he does steal the show. He had probably the most laughs. I mean, everybody is funny in this movie. There's not like a weak link to me. James Franco's hilarious. Craig Robinson's hilarious. Seth Rogen. Like, it's just nonstop. Like I said, it's kind of like the Justice League or Avengers of comedy films, where we've got Captain America, we've got the Hulk, we've got, you know, everyone is just firing on all cylinders, and Danny McBride is a standout as well amongst all of the. He's like the all star of all stars. I can echo everything that you're saying, and you mentioned Rihanna and Emma Watson, just the amount of celebrity cameos. It's just, you know, the first 10 or 15 minutes is just like nonstop. Okay, this person. And I love that all these actors are coming together, and I almost wish that they were in it for more. They don't have a lot of screen time because they are just cameos. But once you get into that main storyline, then you're kind of locked into those guys, and you really want to see what happens next. But yeah, like you said, the set pieces, a lot of them, there's some bad green screen that's going on in a lot of these scenes where once they open the door to the house and the apocalypse is happening around them, it kind of took me out of it for a couple moments. But like I was saying, just I was having such a good time that it was able to overcome not only kind of the thin plot and script to it, but a lot of the effects in the movie I felt like were kind of almost dated immediately. You know, something that I would have seen in a movie 5 years ago, the CG or special effects, which actually, you know what? I didn't mention this in the Man of Steel, but I found the CG in Man of Steel to be not very good. And it took me out of a lot of the action sequences because it just felt like, okay, here's two video game characters fighting each other. It didn't feel real, and it took me out of the fantasy of it. Although, you know, you have to have a level of suspension of disbelief when you have guys flying around and shooting lasers out of their eyes. But I'm a person who will buy into that, you know, full on. And that took me out of Man of Steel. So that also in This Is the End, there were some elements of CG that kind of took me out of it and kind of made me wish that they had done practical effects. But at the same time, it was not so, you know, the flaws were not so great that I wasn't enjoying myself the entire time.
Yeah, like what This Is the End does right, it does right very well. I mean, namely just in casting putting these, you know, and the chemistry that all these actors have together. That is the best thing this movie has going for it. And gladly, when you leave the theater or while you're watching the film, you're not really thinking of the flaws because you just like seeing these people together on the screen.
Yeah.
And when you leave the theater, even though this movie does have its flaws, you leave with – you're so happy. It's such a great ending that this movie has a level of sweetness that I found pretty surprising. And when you get to the ending, you're just happy. You're happy for these characters. You're happy that you experienced this movie and all the laughs that came up to this moment. It was warranted. And again, this is not a perfect film, but this is exactly what you would want from a comedy, something that just keeps you laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing, even if the plot isn't necessarily there. The characters are there, and you're invested in their outcome, even though that these people are somewhat despicable. It definitely revels in that, especially Danny McBride. I mean, I can easily see why people would get so turned off by someone like Danny McBride, because he is so crude and rude and in your face, and he doesn't care about anyone else. But that's what makes him funny to me, that his unwillingness to compromise, you know, is what makes him so great. There's a moment just when he's introduced into this movie, like after the scene when they all rationed all the food and water that they have, and then he shows up and he cooks all the food. He doesn't know what's going on, and he's cleaning his feet with all the bottles of water. It's just the funniest thing. And then that's how you're introduced to someone like him. And the fact that all of these actors are together, and that they've worked together in the past, that they actually make sequels to their movies to pass the time. They make Pineapple Express 2 in this movie. That there's a Zombieland 2. There's someone, I believe Jonah Hill does a Woody Harrelson impression. That's actually really funny. It's just stuff like that. That, you know, yes, you kind of have to know who these people are to enjoy it. But if you do know these people, I think that's another flaw in this movie. You can't really go in without knowing If you don't know who Seth Rogen is or Danny McBride, I don't think my parents would like this movie because they're not familiar with these actors. So that's kind of a flaw. But if you know who at least one of these people are, you're just going to have a ball watching this movie, especially James Franco playing just like kind of this laid back stoner James Franco version of himself. Yeah, like the clip that they keep showing that I keep seeing pop up online that they use to promote the movie is just them showing the rations, like what food they have in the house, and them fighting over this Milky Way. And James Franco's like, "No, that's my Milky Way. I specifically went out to buy this Milky Way for tonight." It's the funniest thing.
Oh, man.
But I guess going back to Man of Steel, to bashing that movie a little bit more, that last 45 minutes of the movie in Man of Steel, I agree. I mean, it just got to a point where it was just a bombardment of just like imagery and just like pounding you into submission. When, you know, you compare – and I think it's really trying to go for something like The Avengers or Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah.
There's some clarity. There's some excitement. There, you know, there's some highs and lows. There's not just – punching.
Especially
in the Avengers, the last 45 minutes of that film, there's a fluidity to watching these people fight as a team, and they acknowledge the fact that they destroyed a city. You know, the last bits of the movie deal with the aftermath of it, like kind of this 9/11 imagery, but also showing people, you know, mourning the deaths of these people. There's actually moments where Captain America tells people to look out for civilians and to take care of each other and saving people's lives. And that's what I thought superhero movies were all about, saving people's lives. But in Man of Steel, it doesn't seem like Superman wants to save anyone's life.
It feels like the collateral damage in Man of Steel would be pretty high. And like you said, I was right there with you. The action sequences. Okay, so a lot of people, I've been talking to people about this movie and telling them that I, like you, found it dull and boring, and they're like, "How could you think it's boring? There's so much action." Yeah, that's true. There is action, and I did enjoy some of the action scenes, but then the action becomes boring. It's not enough just to have people punching each other through buildings. That doesn't make it exciting to me. The action has to mean something. It has to matter. It has to actually have some type of a weight to it. Also, there has to be some stakes involved. I don't feel like Superman was ever in danger at any point. Yeah, he fell down a couple times, but I just never felt like there was any stakes to the action itself. So I found it to be Transformers Dark of the Moon, incomprehensible, just too CG characters punching each other, flailing around, Superman getting picked up and tossed around, and then Superman picking up people and tossing them around. And so I really, you know, it's funny because Superman Returns, people's big complaint was, oh, well, Superman didn't punch anything. He didn't have anybody to punch. And then it's almost like this is the extreme reaction to it. Okay, now all he does is punch people. And that's one of the things about the character of Superman that I wish they would do a lot more is he's supposed to be super intelligent. And how many times have you seen something where he used his intelligence to defeat the enemy or he used it to solve a problem? Most of the time when you see Superman in pop culture, it's, I'm going to solve this crime with my fist. I'm going to punch this thing until it stops moving versus, okay, Batman, let's be the world's greatest detective. Let's solve things. Although in the Nolan movies, he wasn't that much of a detective either. But Superman, I feel like they should play his intelligence up more and actually use that, in an exciting and interesting way.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty telling when the only real superhero that this summer is Vin Diesel in Fast and Furious 6, when he at least acknowledges that we have to save these people from this mayhem. Make sure you watch out for the pedestrians. You know, the scene in the scene with the tank on the highway, you know, all those people that they're actually trying to save all those people's lives. I wish Superman would have done that at the end of the film. I mean, he does it at the beginning of the film, but he doesn't do it anywhere else, which is kind of disappointing.
Yeah. And also our grievances with the film are many, but I haven't mentioned this to you before because we've talked off podcast a little bit, but I have not mentioned to you the things that I really wanted out of it were lacking in the movie, which was fun. Number one, I didn't think it was a very fun movie. Romance, there was the Clark Kent and Lois Lane relationship. I felt like there was no reason for them to be together other than, okay, it's Clark Kent and Lois Lane, so they're supposed to be together. So that's in the movie. I didn't feel any type of attraction between them. I didn't feel any chemistry. I didn't feel any reason for them to kiss at the end of the movie, besides the fact that, like I said, it was Superman and Lois Lane. So I feel like that aspect was lacking. Also, to go along with the fun elements of it, I wanted more humor in the movie as well. So yeah, there was a number of scenes where people were like uncomfortably laughing next to me, but I never felt like there was any real fun to be had in the movie overall. And that led to it, again, being dull and boring to me and feeling like, why is this movie 2 hours and 20 minutes?
Yeah, unlike This Is the End, it's not a very fun movie at all.
Yeah.
The comedy falls surprisingly flat, whatever amount of comedy there is in Man of Steel. And you really got the impression that they were making a film, like with a capital F, that this is a film. This is an important film. And I've been seeing all these things that this movie is going to, like, this is going to get nominated for Best Picture, you know? And I'm thinking to myself, really?
No.
I think that's what they were trying to go for in this movie.
Yeah.
But this movie is taking itself far too seriously. Like, this movie does look like a Terrence Malick film. And Terrence Malick is a very serious filmmaker. And his films really warrant that kind of aesthetic and look and feel and tone to it. Whereas Superman, come on, this is not the Tree of Life. This is not – there has to be some sense of levity. Even in The Dark Knight, there are funny moments in that film. You know, I think namely coming from Heath Ledger trying to blow up the building, the hospital. I never thought a villain blowing up a hospital would be a very funny scene, but Heath Ledger does it very well in a very comedic part in The Dark Knight. This film really does lack that kind of levity, and it lacks a lot of things that you would expect from any movie to be enjoyable. I mean, Zack Snyder has a way about his visuals, but he's definitely not a storyteller. And they're going to make a Man of Steel 2. It's inevitable. I just really want that movie to be a better film than this. And again, I don't think it's a terrible movie, but I don't think it's a good movie either. It just lies there in mediocrity when it seems like it should be something a little bit more, considering what their plans were to make this DC cinematic universe and how long they've been wanting to reboot something like Superman.
Yeah, and that Superman is the number one, you know, icon at DC. A lot of, his popularity goes back and forth with Batman a lot of times, but Superman is the number one character. Like, that's who, when you think of DC, that's who you think of. That's who they want to put all of the weight. And, you know, he was the first superhero ever. Like, that was in comics, he was the very first superpowered, you know, super character that we came to know and love. And I think there should be more responsibility of, you know, there's a difference when, okay, Green Lantern comes out with a movie and it's not that great. Okay, he's Green Lantern. But when it's Superman, I think there should be some type of reverence for the character that should be taken into account.
Well, and also, speaking of which, since Superman is the first superhero of all time, it really bothered – this bothered me in the trailer too, and it bothered me in the movie at the very end showing – young Clark Kent wearing
wearing
a cape and putting his hands on his hips like he is Superman. I'm thinking to myself, first, kids who do that are aping Superman. They're trying to be like Superman. I mean, we've all done that. We all put like a coat on our backs and like pretended we were flying as if we were Superman. In this world that was created in this movie, were there superheroes before Superman? Like, it doesn't make sense that a young Clark Kent would do something like that.
Yeah, that really kind of bothered me.
It makes sense in Captain America. If you remember at the end of Captain America, that showing the kid with the garbage can shield. Because at the time in the film, Captain America is a real-life superhero, and these kids are trying to emulate and pretend that they're Captain America. So that makes sense. It doesn't make sense here if there is no superhero before Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that exact same experience. And I came to, you know, just kind of write it off. Okay, yeah, there was in this universe, you know, you can make up anything in your mind. Okay, this is there was a character with a cape before that. But yeah, it's dumb because Superman in the movie itself, they kind of established that Kryptonians walked around with capes and it was something that was his ancestry. So it would make no sense on Earth for him to be running around with a cape unless there was some comic book character on Earth, Ultraman or something. It just didn't make any sense to me. But, you know what? And there was a lot of really kind of small nitpicky things that I had, which that, you know, they're not major criticisms. They don't really affect the movie, but they just kind of bothered me. Things like him, the way that he found his suit in the movie, just, oh yeah, I was in a compartment in this ship that's 18,000 years old that my dad, he knew my exact measurements of how I was going to be when I was an adult. So he made this suit and it was the exact, you know, these red, blue and yellow colors when no one else on Krypton ever had any, you know, everyone had gray. Like it would have made more sense to me if everyone was walking around in a red, blue and yellow costume on Krypton. Cause then it would have been, oh, okay. It's, you know, his ancestry. This is where he comes from. This makes sense for it to be the uniform. But For this, the only reason is just because the comic book character was that color, so that's why we have to make the suit in this one. So that kind of bothered me. The artificial intelligence of his father kind of bothered me. Like, it just made me the leap that you have to take with him, this artificial intelligence. Like, it was the same thing with Marlon Brando in the original in Superman the movie when he was able to ask him questions and he could answer any single question. Like, he had to. It was almost like Marlon Brando had to program himself into, okay, if he asked me this question, okay, this, I'll answer this. If he asked me this question, I'll answer this. Like, he had to program every single response into the thing. But anyways, that's, like I said, it was a nitpicky thing. Also, his beard, I didn't understand how he was able to shave because Gillette made this whole big thing about, okay, Man of Steel, how does he shave? There was a whole big contest over it. And then in the movie, okay, one scene he has a beard, next scene he's clean shaven. No explanation, not even one line of dialogue. Oh, yeah, because I'm impenetrable. I can't, you know, nothing can harm me, but all of a sudden I can shave? That was a nitpicky thing that kind of bothered me as well.
Well, I guess with his costume, it could have been like Marty McFly in Back to the Future 2 with with the jacket, you know, like how the jacket doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And then it's the size
jacket is
adjusting.
Now dry.
Yeah, size adjusting. It could have been something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's the same thing with the cape. Like, you can explain anything away with, oh, yeah, yeah. It was obviously this, these Kryptonian materials where it was form-fitting to the skin. Yeah, and on Krypton, we fly around on Avatar dragons all over the place.
It was definitely like taking off from the Avatar thing. I mean, when I saw the film, I was in awe of that, like that first 5 minutes. I mean, science fiction is my favorite genre, so you can put anything like that in a movie, and my mouth will be agape just seeing stuff like that. And I was pointing to the screen like, look at all these creatures, that's so cool. So I liked all that kind of stuff, and that's why the first 25-20 minutes of the movie I liked quite a bit. But then it was just really downhill from there. After that, it's just like diminishing returns until the very end.
Yeah. And then, you know what? Another thing, just real quick before we end, kind of the whole Kryptonians, their whole race seemed to be dumb to me. The way that they just like, oh yeah, we're going to explore all these other planets, we're going to set up all these outposts, and all these things they added to this Kryptonian mythos just kind of seemed dumb to me at the end. Let's blow up this planet. Nobody's going to actually care about, you know, saving this planet. We have this great utopia. Everyone's happy here. We're riding flying dinosaurs, and now we're just going to waste it all and let our planet explode. Like, that just seemed kind of dumb to me that nobody would have stepped in and said something. And the fact that they just waited until the planet was about to explode to be concerned, like, you know, he's like, hey, guys, the planet's about to blow up. No, we're okay. We're just going to stay here. And then it just all of a sudden explodes. Like, a lot of that stuff kind of bothered me as well. But like I said, it's kind of nitpicky stuff, not major criticisms of it.
Well, I guess it could have also went to like the ship they launched Superman in was the only ship they had on that
planet. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah, that's
so
another
advanced,
thing. Like, okay,
we only have one ship.
Yeah, Jor-El knows that the planet's going to explode, but he only sends his son away. And yeah, that was kind of dumb to me also. But you know what? I did like Russell Crowe as Jor-El. whenever his presence was on screen, I was kind of enjoying it. And you know what? Like you, I actually could have seen a spinoff Jor-El on Krypton, like his entire sci-fi movie by himself.
Yeah, actually, if the whole movie was just, you know, Zod and Jor-El on Krypton, like a prequel, I think that would have been cool. I mean, just namely, I do like what they did with Krypton, showing all these cool little prehistoric dinosaur things that they ride and when they go underwater and all of that. So I thought the world building was pretty great, but then it really devolve it into just a typical standard film. I think because the movie is so dumb and takes itself so seriously, it therefore comes off as just retarded and stupid. I mean, I cannot and not to use the word retarded as a pejorative, I guess, but it's one of the things I did not like about the movie, that it just took itself way too seriously. And again, like, we're making a film. This is going to win me an Oscar type of movie. Like, you kind of have to have some levity when it comes into it, or it's a fine thing to balance. I mean, Christopher Nolan did it with The Dark Knight, but he couldn't replicate it with The Dark Knight Rises. You know, The Dark Knight Rises is a good film, but it's not as good as the Dark Knight, and it's a pretty hard thing to do. And this movie just really falls really short of that. Let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night, a pretty lengthy one on Man of Steel and This Woo! Is the End. Where can we find you online, Justin Vactor?
You can always find me over at screenrant.com, posting my daily geek picks, all things geeky around the internet. You can find in one place at screenrant.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, Autorcast.com, GiantFreakingRobot.com, and MentalFloss.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. On the next episode of Shakya Presents Movie Night, we're going to be discussing World War Z and Monsters University. sad to say, I have very little interest in seeing Monsters University, but hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised with that. And I'm very curious to see World War Z. So that should be an interesting episode. So closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye.